What's going on, man?
Hey, Ben. Wow, what's with the hat?
I know.
I like that. That's kind of cool.
Well, Grandma doesn't like it. And
she done?
No. That's because I didn't do my hair. but I'll be honest.
I need a backwards hat.
You look great. You look great. I see Ike's in the back. Is he ready?
He's ready. Izzy's down here and everybody's kind of ready for this. We have a major storm outside. So I hope we don't go off. We've lost our power once today.
Yeah. And I'll go ahead and kind of put that out there for people. We are, I think, I'm in Knoxville, Doc is in Kingsport. We're both in storms. So we will, if we go in and out, just stay patient with us. We're going to get through the whole show no matter what. Pop, you ready to roll? Was your day good? Are you exhausted?
I had a great day. No, not really.
Did you get a walk-in?
Great. Yeah, I got a walk-in at lunch, and like I do every day, and fantastic.
All right, I got to do this for you guys. Accountability Tuesday. 6992.
6992.
Yeah, I still got some time. Man. I got to get to 8K. I think 8K is decent.
8K. Yeah.
I need to start walking more. All right, guys, we're getting to the show. Thank you guys for hanging out with us on the Performance Medicine Show. If you have a question for Dr. Rogers, go ahead and put it in the comments. We're going to start by going over a few that came in through email throughout the week. This is a vitamin question. I loved Lucas's talk last week about overtaking supplements. This is in reference to the Dive Into Diet episode on whether or not you're taking too many supplements, which we're all kind of into supplements here. So I think we're all kind of teetering. Curious on the vitamin C. I was thinking that way back we learned on here that the life extension vitamin C with bioquercetin does have a longer half-life in your body. Is this accurate? And I'm going to go ahead and put this follow-up question just so you know where it's going. If not, then to his point, how does taking C help if it leaves your body within 30 to 60 minutes of taking it? What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's supposed to have a longer half-life. And I think the C with bioquercetin, by life extensions, you know, it's a pretty good formulation. I like it. Because you combine that flavonoid with vitamin C. But yeah, you know, that's a really good question, as a matter of fact. But the thing about it is a lot of things that we either take in or produce on our own have short half-lives. That doesn't mean they don't work. You know, a lot of times, most of the time they work anyway. For example, growth hormone. You know, you secrete most of your growth hormone at night in just very small pulses. Mm. And, you know, it stimulates other things to work. So I think of vitamins kind of like that, that whether it's a fat soluble vitamin, A, D, E, and K, or the water soluble ones like the B and C, it still helps. So, you know, it doesn't have to last in your body 24 hours to stimulate an action. And have a good effect on cellular health. So, and I'm certainly a proponent of vitamin C. You know, I think it just helps in so many different ways, especially your immune system. Gosh, you know, we give so much vitamin C IV. I was talking with somebody today about, I think it was Pratik, we talked about giving IV vitamin C for sepsis. It's one of the best treatments for sepsis, yet not many hospitals will do this because they just don't know about it. But if I was septic in a hospital, I would definitely beg for IV vitamin C along with the other treatment that I might need. But so it's not a big deal that it's not going to last in your system for 24 hours. The fact is you're getting a good dose of vitamin C. For example, but here's another good example of vitamin C. I tell people when they get sick, take a gram every hour until you feel better.
Yep.
You know, you're not going to overdose on vitamin C.
Yes.
It's water soluble. You're going to eliminate it, but it's going to have some positive actions.
It's really, really interesting. That was something that our good friend Jeff Thomas from Life Extension mentioned in our podcast episode on Outside the Box, you know, if he's starting to feel something, he'll take C every hour for 24 yeah. hours. And
it works.
And it really
while awake. Don't wake up to take it, but but yeah, you'd be amazed at how much better you'll feel when you get an IV dose of vitamin C.
Super interesting. Super interesting.
A wonderful thing. But great question. Wonderful question.
Great question there. Terry, I see you. What's going on? Susan, so good to see you. Thank you for hanging out with us. Thelma's got a great question. Thank you for that. Candy, I see your question. Wonderful. If you guys got questions for Doc, go ahead and put them in the comments. Welcome in, everybody, to the Performance Medicine Show. Let's go to this. This is a fun one because knowing you, I know you love doing these. I've known you my whole life. I feel like you always kind of geek.
I guess you have. Yeah. I remember when you were born, Ben. I was right there.
I feel like I've known you forever.
You have.
The question is, since I don't live near you, to have some small spider veins injected using polidocanol, what type of doctor would you suggest I see to hopefully have this done the best way? So this is around doing spider veins. Yeah. My initial thought is a primary care doc, but you might have a different thought.
I'll just say a good doctor that has good hands and has done a lot of them. You know, you don't have to be a vein specialist. A lot of times you can go to some of the vein centers. And usually if you do that, if you have a lot of problem with venous congestion, reflux, and larger veins, varicose, then you want to go to somebody that does the ultrasound mapping and then gets rid of the greater saphenous vein. And then the spider veins are just minor things, mostly for cosmetic. But if you start to get these, you probably ought to have an ultrasound to make sure you don't have reflux or backflow that may portend more serious problems later on with these type of with circulation. But I've done thousands of these just because I took an interest in it and did some training up in Chicago with it. And it's just a matter of doing a lot of them. I do like polidocanol over normal saline because it doesn't sting as much. For one thing, polidocanol is a local anesthetic. And if you get it outside the tiny veins, which you invariably will, it won't burn your skin kind of like saline does. It's a little more expensive than saline. But look up vein specialist. And usually what happens is you're going to have somebody like a cardiologist or sometimes even a vascular surgeon that will do the big stuff. And then their nurse practitioner, PA, will take care of cleaning up the small spider veins. As long as they have good experience and they do a lot of them, then you're fine with them. I think just look it up and see who does them at the local vein centers.
Great question there. I love, I just love a spider vein question because we've talked about it a lot and we don't get a lot of questions around it on this
show. I love shooting up veins. I use a vein light and I just love watching it branch out and kind of destroy the vein.
A little insider information here, guys, for those that are with us live. Another thing that Doc loves to do that I'm not super fond of is you like taking toenails off.
Oh, yeah. I didn't say that. Yeah, I don't take as many off as I used to, but yeah, my dad taught me how to do those. And it's a fun little procedure.
It is no fun if you're the one getting your toenail taken off.
you numb it up really good so you don't feel anything. But
Richard, I see your question. Great question, Don and Steve. Thank you. My brother Steve is in the building. I hope you're out there gardening right now. Hopefully you're not in a storm. It's storming here. He took my toenail off. Me too, Katie. It's no fun. All right, let's get to the next one here. I love a omega-3 question. I have been off my omega-3s fish oil for a week. Tried to have blood drawn this week for a PRP aesthetic treatment, and my blood was so thick and very dark that they couldn't get it to flow into the tube. Should I be concerned that being off the fish oil, my blood is that thick immediately thinks blood clots? And it seems that they've done labs. I've done labs once a month right now to check my hormones, and this has never been an issue. So seems the blood thickened once they got off omega-3s. Any concern there?
Can you still see me? Because my screen just went blank.
I can still see you.
Okay. Well, I can't see anything. So, but anyway, I'm going to text the help desk.
Well, now you're frozen.
Yeah. I got a little distracted there because I'm staring at a blank screen. But anyway, could you repeat that question for me, Ben? I caught the tail end of it, but.
Yes, we are a tad bit frozen, guys. So what we'll do is I'm going to read the question. Doc is still with us because I can hear you. The question is, I have been off my omega-3 fish oil for a week. Tried to have blood drawn this week for a PRP aesthetic treatment, and my blood was so thick and very dark that they couldn't get it to flow into the tube. Should I be concerned that being off the fish oil, my blood is that thick? Oh, there we go.
Yeah, I'm back.
Thanks, Ike.
Actually, Ike's the one that fixed it.
Look at Ike.
He's more computer savvy than I am.
Ike just saved the show.
He saved the day. Thank you, Ike. All he did was put his paw on some of the keyboard and it started working again. But yeah, one thing about, you know, drawing blood for PRP, you have to use a larger needle. You need to use an 18 gauge needle if they didn't do that, because otherwise it's kind of tough to get it out to put it into the centrifuge. And so you have to use a large needle. I don't know if you're dehydrated and why it wouldn't come out. It doesn't necessarily mean your blood was so thick. You know, I check a CBC to see what your blood count is, for one thing. You know, before I do PRP, and I've had it done, and I've done many of them, I don't tell people to get off the omega-3s beforehand. I don't really care. I tell them to get off the aspirin and the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. But I really don't tell them to even get off the omega-3s, for one thing. Now, whether that had a factor in this or not, I'm not sure. Mm. They may have not just used a large enough needle, but or you may have been a little dehydrated. So I'm not sure. But have them try it again. Make sure they use an 18-gauge needle to try to get it off there before they spin it down. And check a CBC. So it could have been a red herring. You know what I mean by that, Ben?
No.
When I say red herring, most of the people won't even know what I mean, but it's kind of one of those slang statements that it means nothing. Mm. It doesn't really, it's a one-off. It's not really true. So in other words, if they redrew it, it'd probably be normal. So that may be. So I haven't tried again, but a red herring means that it doesn't make sense. And this is funny. The reason I told this story to a patient today, because I thought it was funny. One time I saw a lab result many years ago that I thought was just a red herring, meaning it wasn't a true lab result. It was a laboratory error. So I tell my nurse to call the patient because I thought it was a red herring. Could they come back in for another blood draw? And my nurse calls the patient up and tells her that Dr. Rogers says you need to eat more red herring fish based on your blood work. I thought that was hilarious. I loved it. So since that time, I've asked people, do you know what a red herring means? And not many people do. But anyway,
well, I've experienced
that may be a red herring.
I've experienced a red herring, and it was the last time I went to the dentist. They checked my blood pressure. My blood pressure was through the roof. I immediately went to our Knoxville office after I got my teeth cleaned, just to make sure my my blood pressure wasn't that high, but I have white coat syndrome.
Oh.
All right, Tracy, I see you. Brandy, great question. Andrea, great question. Love that. Ron, what's up? Let's get to the next question here. I recently began using Kachava protein powder to replace my usual breakfast. I was just wondering what Dr. Rogers thought of the product and its ingredients. I've been using it about 6 weeks and can tell a noticeable difference in energy levels and overall feeling of being alert and focused. That's awesome. What's your thoughts on this?
I've never used it, but it's pretty big. I mean, it's all over the place with advertising. I've heard some pretty good reports about it. I need to order some just to taste it and see. But most people use that more as a meal replacement in opposed to something like Perfect Aminos, which is not really a meal replacement, but that has 30 grams of protein. I think Kachava has about 25. It's mostly a pea protein-based powder for sure. I think it has some other types of protein in it as well. It's no animal protein in it. I like animal protein the best, but if you just want a protein shake as kind of a meal replacement, I think it's probably a pretty good choice. I think it has some other stuff in it that's pretty helpful. And they say it tastes pretty good. I've known some people that use it. I think it's kind of expensive from what I've heard. But, it's awesome and it's working for you. And I certainly think it's pretty good because I'm pretty sure it doesn't have gluten, soy, dairy, any of that stuff. It's pretty clean. It's organic. So I think it's probably a pretty good one. Great.
We're going to keep that on our radar, Kachava. What's the cereal that you tried with Andy, that protein cereal, this weekend?
What's the name of that? I just picked it up in Fresh Market just to see what it tastes like, and it has no sugar. Maybe
the nutrition facts were pretty good.
Yeah, a lot of protein in it, and it has no grains in it. It's also based on pea protein, so it is a vegetable protein. It's not going to be as good as an animal protein as far as absorption. But I think somebody's bringing some of it down. This is funny because I never eat cereal. I just picked this up to see what it. Three Wishes. There it is.
I just found it interesting because
grain-free cereal.
Yeah, you and Andy were both just looking at the. It was Mother's Day, and you were looking at the nutrition facts, and it looked pretty decent. Because we've actually got questions around, like, you know, what cereal is good? Because obviously,
I've always said no cereal is good, but
yeah,
you know, if you have to eat it, you know, and all. But so one thing, of course, if you do intermittent fasting, the Kachava is going to break the fast, and that'll certainly break the fast. The Perfect Aminos will not break a fast.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I usually do, get up in the morning and before I work out a little bit and do the, you know, a glass of water with Perfect Amino stirred in. And also I put a little methylene blue. Seems to help my workouts go pretty well. But yeah, interesting, you know.
All right, let's get to the next question here. This is an interesting one. Have inner ear inflammation from antibiotics. They're calling it ototoxin, and I could be pronouncing that wrong.
Ototoxin.
Is there any supplements you would suggest to take the inflammation down faster to heal my vertigo it's causing? And goes on to say the drug Ceftinir was given for pneumonia.
Yeah. I've seen that happen. I think curcumin is probably the best one that we have for that. I don't know if you have tinnitus with it or not, or loss of hearing, but you know, vertigo is awful. Mm. You know, you might even have to take, what is the one other supplement that I like for that vertigo? I think it's polycosinol that works pretty good for that. I'd have to check that, but, But that's a tough problem. Mm. It should go away if it's acute and cause some antibiotics. The other thing I would definitely get on is probiotics. You know, since you're on antibiotics, something like Digestial is, of course, my favorite. But interesting. Yeah, there's some antibiotics that can really damage your inner ear. And, you know, those are usually the heavy hitters. But like gentamicin is one we use in the hospital a lot. And it's really ototoxic. But
have you heard of this?
Yeah.
Ceftinor?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. It's just a cephalosporin. Very common antibiotic. So use some curcumin, turmeric, and see how that works. And, you know, go from there. It should get better.
I hope that gets better. I know that's miserable. So keep us posted on how that's going. And we'll hopefully maybe come up with some more stuff. But those are some good supplements to start with. All right. I love this question because those of you who have been with us for a while know that we did the Boston Heart Panel before the Cleveland Heart Panel years ago. And this kind of relates to that a little bit. They're, from my perspective, they're identical. But I'm going to get Doc's perspective here. Back in 2015 on my Boston Heart Panel that you did, it shows the breakdown of very large, medium, small, and very small particles of my HDL. And that's not a typo. That's actually how the results go. And do these amounts of each size particle change over time, or does this tell me that I will always have more than optimal of the small particles? And it goes on to say, I don't see this info on my Cleveland, which is much more recent, and that's what kind of cued, you know, maybe there are some differences between the two tests.
Yeah, they're basically, the Boston, maybe it has prettier colors and maybe spelled it out a little bit better than the Cleveland, but it basically has the same information on it, so that it does give you the size of the particles for both the HDL and the LDL. And whether it's going to change a lot or not, probably not. A lot of with the HDL, a lot of it's inherited. I don't see many people making great strides in changing their HDL. LDL maybe, but I mean, what you want is more large HDL particles. Think of HDL as a garbage can that carries off the LDL. So the larger it is, the more it's carrying off. Same thing with LDL. You want large, fluffy LDL particles so that they won't stick to your arteries. They just go by. The small, dense ones are the ones that you worry about forming plaque. So, but I'm not sure you can change that a whole lot. You know, obviously, if you don't exercise much, start exercising, your HDL may pop up a little bit. But some people, even some very good athletes that I know, just have low HDL. And no matter what they do, they can't get it very much higher. So I think it's inherited. And it's always lower for men than women. And really, HDL and triglycerides are really important. I think more important than LDL. You know, we always focus on the LDL. We got to get that LDL low. But in all the reading I've done, I think the HDL and the triglycerides are more important than the LDL. And remember, a statin's not going to help either of those. Statin's not going to affect you. As a matter of fact, a statin will lower your HDL and won't affect your triglycerides. It will, of course, lower your LDL. But yeah, the same information is basically on both those panels. It's just interpreted a little bit different.
Wonderful question there. Thank you so much for sending that in and kind of giving us the opportunity to talk about, you know, the HDL versus the LDL. It's just so fun to, one, hear you talk about it, because I know it's a different perspective. And both the Boston and the Cleveland are super, super in-depth tests. So it's kind of fun to dissect those. Okay, I got one more question here, and I see questions are coming in on the comments. Elena, what's up? I see Candy's got another one. Perfect. Roel, I love that idea. Chia seeds. I love that. I think that's a wonderful topic. Let's go to this one here, and then we'll go into the live comments here with everybody. Is it possible COVID could cause a swollen thyroid?
Yes, for sure. You know, COVID can certainly trigger off any autoimmune disease. I've seen it. You know, gosh, we just see a lot of stuff with COVID triggering off rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, Parkinson's, cancer, Hashimoto's, thyroiditis. So yeah, it is very possible. Usually there's a trigger to everything. I mean, I always often say we're all walking around like a loaded gun. It's the environment that pulls the trigger. And so you may have certain genetic predispositions to have anything, like especially a thyroid problem. So yes, COVID can, any virus can. Even extreme stress can cause it. You know, poor gut health. Yeah, sure can.
Super interesting.
Get it checked out and find out why it's swollen.
So it wouldn't have been COVID that caused it, but COVID could have been the trigger. And yeah. And then there's still an underlying cause.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we all have these genetic predispositions, but something pulls the trigger. It certainly could be any virus, especially COVID.
Super interesting. All right, guys, that's going to do it for the questions that came in throughout the week. Thank you for those who took the time to email us, put a question up on Facebook or Instagram. Thank you guys for doing that. We're going to go live to the questions here with everyone that's with us here. Man, it's so fun to see you guys in here interacting. Thank y'all for your questions. Thank y'all for saying hi. So if you're with us or if you're new, let us know who you are, where you're from. We love kind of, you know, seeing where everybody's at, what questions they have. Mama B's Place, I see your question. Love that. All right, we're going to get to questions here. If you guys have a question, go ahead and put it in. Let's see. I'm going to put this up for you to see, Doc, because I don't know if you saw this beforehand. Thank you both for all you do. Last week you talked about a home medical kit. Have you ever thought about doing a podcast on what you would recommend and doses? I'm putting this up for you to see because this is something I know you're passionate about. Real quick, kind of, can you give maybe like a Cliff Notes version of what a podcast would be on recommended medicines?
Yeah, just medicines to keep in your home kit and when you travel, like Zofran, like antibiotics, like medicines for a UTI, for a bronchitis, sinus infection. You know, just gosh, activated charcoal, maybe an EpiPen. Yeah, you know, Imodium. There's so many different things that you could include in it, but you definitely want the basics, like I've just mentioned.
Activated charcoal came up with, I believe it was Roel's question around, you know, if you do get food poisoning and there's no place open. That's a good one to have on hand. I love that.
We'll try to do a podcast on it.
Let's get to John here on YouTube. Tried PRP in Bristol office for shoulder with good results. Can it be used for the stenosis in the neck? I was in your Kingsport office today and forgot to ask Doc. What's your thoughts on this?
I think it works really well for shoulders. If you do it for stenosis in the neck, that's going to have to be done by a neurosurgeon, you know, under probably CT guidance, you know, or at least, you know, you have to have live x-ray guidance to do something that close to your spinal cord. So we certainly don't do that. But some of the orthopedic doctors and neurosurgeons are believers in it. Some of them routinely use it when they're surgerizing people. But yeah, that's a toughie there. If it's stenosed down and you have no room for the nerve to exit, you know, it's going to be a toughie. You may need surgery for that, unfortunately. But they do facet joint injections of steroids and they do ablations and all. But I don't know of anybody here that does just specifically PRP to the cervical canal. Mm-hmm. That's a tough fit. We certainly don't do that. You better get somebody that really has some expertise in that.
Yeah, that would be
great. Great question.
Thank you for that, John, for putting that in there. Let's get to Thelma's question here. Hi, Doc. Is there a way of shrinking benign brain tumors? I'm assuming this is when someone says brain tumors, is that a cancer?
No, benign means not cancer.
Okay.
Like a meningioma, which my mom had, it was of no consequence. I don't know of anything that really would work for that. I mean, you could always try anti-inflammatories. Certainly short-term prednisone may help if it's causing some edema around the area. But a lot of times with benign meningiomas, they just watch them and there are no consequence. Other times it may be. As a matter of fact, I saw a patient today that has an arachnoid cyst on his CAT scan. And I think it's affecting his personality. So it's in his frontal lobe. Mm. So he needs, again, it's benign, but he needs to think about doing something about that. Mm. You can certainly use high dose prednisone, but that's not an ultimate answer because you can't do it for too long a time. But it's a really interesting question though. If it's growing and you know, you may have to have a surgical removal of that. Depends on where it is. Great question. I wish I could answer it better.
Thelma, thank you for putting that in there. Good evening to Robin. I see you. Tiffany, great question. We're going to get to that over on Facebook. Let's see here. Where am I at? There we go. I'm on candy here. Can you please talk about the potassium with extended magnesium? I kind of forgot the difference between that one and the regular magnesium I get in your office. Can I take both? And then I do believe there's a follow-up, Candy, if I'm correct, if I saw it right. Then I'm just going to go ahead and put this up from Candy as well. Sorry, one more question. I forgot to ask Andy on thoughts of me taking a selenium vitamin for my thyroid. So there's two separate questions there.
Yeah.
Which one do you want to tackle first?
Yeah. Well, the selenium. Yeah. If you have Hashimoto's, you should be taking some selenium and zinc for your thyroid. Mm. Definitely. And getting on a gluten-free diet, usually about 200 milligrams of selenium, 50 of zinc, but yeah, definitely should be doing that. It's got a lot of other good things to it too. But, the first part of your question, potassium, I've got some of that at my house too. You probably don't need both of them. People that tend to have sweat a lot that may deplete their potassium, that exercise a lot, can take that form of magnesium. If for some reason your electrolytes may be off. But you know, some people do that because of leg cramps, which magnesium helps as well. But I found that really, it's not really the potassium, it's more the sodium electrolyte that causes leg cramps. But nevertheless, I got some for Jeannie because she tends to have some leg cramps. That's why I have it up in my bathroom. Mm. But it's two different forms. You just don't, if you get too much magnesium, I wouldn't take them both. You'll get diarrhea. So, and I'm not sure what other form of magnesium you're taking. There's 9 different types. You know, if you certainly tend to be constipated, you need some mag citrate in there. If you're worried about your brain, use magnesium glycinate or threonate. That's the one I take, Neuromag. But yeah, I mean, there's a little less magnesium in there. So if you're constipated, just get on the regular magnesium 500 milligram by Life Extension, and they have citrate and magnesium oxide in that one. That's the one most people get. Mm. So unless you have a pretty specific reason, you don't really need to get the, you know, the potassium in there, unless you're on a diuretic or cramp a lot. But that's a great question.
The magnesium questions are really interesting because it is kind of confusing. There's so many different ones. One thing, Candy, I would encourage you to do is Robin Riddle didn't explain this episode on magnesium, and she goes through all of them, every single one, and what she would use it for. So if you do want to dive a little bit deeper, just search for Performance Medicine, Robin Riddle, magnesium. Explain this magnesium. It should come up over on.
I like the way you say magnesium. It's just, you know, say that again.
Magnesium.
Yeah. That's a cool way of saying it. It sounds French.
Magnesium. all right, let's get to Donna and Steve here. Please tell me about oils. What do you cook with? What kind to make salad dressings? And do you use butter or ghee? Tell me everything. And I see there's a follow-up. And what is a no-no oil or fat? And before Doc answers, Lucas did a dive into diet on oils, and there's like some clear ones you'd want to stay away from, obviously. But go ahead. Tell me what you think here.
First of all, I don't cook. You know, I don't think men should be cooking. You know, I think that's up to the women. I'm kidding. I wish I could cook. I do cook eggs sometimes.
You make good coffee too.
I do make, I make coffee and I take out the garbage. Then I ride my bike, play guitar and sleep and watch Netflix.
And entertain Ike.
Yeah. Play with the dogs. But I wish I was a good cook. And I know you don't cook, Ben.
Not yet.
I think you can cook with, probably the best one is coconut oil. Has a low smoke point. Yeah, you can cook in avocado oil, or you can cook in olive oil. You got to get a really good olive oil. So I think coconut's the preferred if you do a lot of research on it. I like ghee better than butter. I like it better. I think it's a little more nutritious, but I love the Kerrygold butter as well. So I use both of them. A lot of times I forget I've got the ghee in my cabinet. So if I cook my eggs occasionally, I'll use ghee. So it's just really interesting. I don't make salad dressings. I just use oil and vinegar, really, mostly.
Well, I tell you what, you guys definitely should watch that episode with Lucas, because he talks a lot about olive oil, actually. And there's lots of...
How it can be tainted. Yeah, you got to be careful with olive oil.
So you want to...
Mafia's involved, believe me. And you went to Italy a couple weeks ago. Did you see any mafia types over there?
I didn't.
You didn't? Did you eat some olive oil over there?
I did. Of course, you want the extra virgin olive oil. But Lucas does a great job of he actually tells you how to make this salad dressing that is with, I think it's extra virgin olive oil. But Donna, Steve, I know he can answer that question way better than
way better.
Doc and I. Let's see here. So we're gonna keep moving. And if you need a link to that, Donna, Steve, I'll send it to you.
Never use vegetable oils or seed oils or margarine for sure.
Yep.
You know, lard is not bad. The old fashioned lard, but just interesting.
Thank you for that question over on Facebook. Let's get to Richard here. Dr. Rogers, you recommend pure aminos and use it yourself personally. Have you seen any increase in your muscle mass personally using pure perfect aminos? It's going to be perfect aminos, I believe.
Yeah. Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. I think it's going to take time. I have put on, I guess I can say I have gained some muscle with it, because really one of the reasons I got on it was because I had a lot of gut problems. If you follow my notes and everything, I really had a pretty bad gut following the second time I got a very mild case of COVID. But for some reason, it was a perfect storm, and it really messed my gut up. I'm sure I had microscopic colitis because everything else was normal. And I lost about 14 pounds, and I'm a lean guy anyway. So I've gained about 10 of it back. So I just hope it's not fat. But, you know, when you get 68 years old and you're trying to build muscle, it's tough because you have to lift heavy weights. I mean, you got to put some strain on your muscles. And a lot of times you get this old, you start doing that and your shoulder hurts, you know,
yeah.
Or your back. So you got to be really careful that you don't tweak something, because you will. So I can say I have gained some of the weight back. I'm still not where I want to be, but I certainly feel better. And I guess since I've gained the weight, I don't think it's fat. You know, I'd love to do a DEXA scan that shows the percentage muscle versus fat versus water that I have. It's just not readily available around here. But it's a great question.
And we'll probably we'll keep you posted there, Richard, on that, because you know you are trying to gain muscle and you know it's a very interesting challenge, because you certainly don't want to get hurt, but you also got to put, you know, resistance on the muscle in order to build muscle. So
I saw a guy. Well, the last patient I saw today, as a matter of fact, was a COVID long hauler, really previously very healthy 43-year-old. Who had, he's like me, he's naturally lean. He's a hard gainer, meaning it's hard for guys like us to gain weight. And he spent 3 years and finally got he gained about 20 pounds of muscle, you know, through the right type of eating a lot and right amounts of protein and pumping iron. And so he felt better than he ever had. Then he got a pretty bad case of COVID. And this is over a year later, really almost 2 years. And he still has long COVID symptoms. Mm. And he lost all that weight. He's trying to gain that weight back. So it's not easy for a lot of people to gain muscle mass. I'm telling you, it is hard work.
Yep. Don and Steve, I see that. I will send you that link to Robin's episode on magnesium and Lucas's on oils. If you could send me an email to ben@performancemedicine.net, I'll reply with those two links. Thank you for putting that in there. Such a great question on oils. And Richard, that's a great question around building muscle, because it's something we talk a lot about, you know, but it's just more complicated, you know, than just build muscle, you know, because you don't want to get hurt. All right, let's get to, I think Roel got a question up on YouTube. Do you use xylitol gum?
I don't chew gum, really, just because it hurts my TMs.
Yeah.
TM joint. But that would be one that would be okay. You know, it probably prevents cavities. If you saw my episode with Dr. Creech, dentist, then she talks a little bit about it. As a matter of fact, I'm going to have her back on the podcast here in 2 or 3 weeks. She just texted me with the results of my saliva sample for the mouth bacteria. Mm. Yeah. She said I had at least, she hasn't gotten specific. I haven't been over it with her. She did say that I had at least 2 weeks to live. And she said not to buy any green bananas. I guess that means maybe I'm not going to make long enough for them to turn ripe or something.
I don't know. I don't know. But I'm interested to see about that bacteria test.
She was kidding. She was kidding me. But she does have my results, and we'll go over them in another podcast. So, yeah, I'm okay on that. You know, use too much xylitol, you may get diarrhea, but it has some other advantages.
Andrew's question here is, any advice on what can be done for a compression fracture in the back from a car wreck? Also, I'd like to know your thoughts on grounding. Let's go after the compression fracture first.
Yeah, I saw a patient today that had a compression fracture from a car wreck a few years ago. Mm. And she had I forget what procedure it's called, but it's almost like they go in there and shoot the substance in there, like it's like concrete into your vertebrae, and it kind of builds it back. But, you know, it's got to be done by a neurosurgeon, of course. So you can do that. That's probably the best thing you can do. Otherwise, you're talking about rods and, you know, fusions and major stuff. So there is a procedure where they inject the stuff into your the bulk of that lumbar bone, if that's where it is. It can even be thoracic or even neck. But so ask your neurosurgeon about that possibility. They've had some different compounds, and they, you know, one of them went out of favor, and I'm not sure how much of it they're still doing. But grounding, I like grounding. You know, I bought the grounding sheets and the pillow covers and the mattress cover for my bed. I actually did a podcast on that, I believe, didn't I, Ben, on grounding?
Yeah, there was grounding in it. I don't know if it was grounding specific, but it was something that you did, you know, were pretty high on and we're trying out with these different. I hadn't heard about the pillowcases until you talked
about
it.
Yeah, I've got them. Yeah. They have little wires coming out of them. You plug it into a grounding outlet, and it just helps protect you against EMFs and that type of thing. Puts it more of a negative charge in your body. And I can't tell you that I've noticed a whole lot of difference, to be honest with you, with it. But, you know, and it's also good. It's good just to walk in the dirt, you know, barefoot.
Yeah.
When we walk around our shoes, we don't get that negative electron effect that the earth gives you that's good for you. It kind of has a positive result on your own electrons in your body and all your cells. You know, you got to, so when that gets thrown off, then, you know, things start happening like inflammation. So yeah, I like it. I can't say you'll feel totally different, but it's probably a long-term thing.
It's probably like a practice, you know, something that, you know, over a long period of time, doing it consistently and making that a part of your day. Can't imagine that it's bad, you know, like it can only be good.
Yeah. Walking in the woods itself, you know, with bare feet is great for you.
Yeah. Thank you, Andrew, for putting that question in. Or it's two questions. Brandy on Facebook is asking, any ideas of tips for ringing in the ears? Very common question we get. In 2021, COVID got my inner ear and had ringing and dizziness, did steroids, and it went away. Been fine ever since. In February of this year, flew on a plane, long flight, started ringing again, hasn't stopped. Have had labs all normal, steroid pack didn't work this time. Sent to audiology, they said damage possible to high-pitched frequency sound, and my brain in subbing the sound in its place. Lack of sleep from hearing my ears is making me crazy. It's a tough one.
That's a very tough one. My wife, Jenny, has it too. I think from being around a lot of loud noises, she's a musician. It's just a tough, you can try polycosanol. You can try turmeric. Nothing seems to work great for it. You know, if you have loss of hearing, dizziness, and tinnitus, and you got to think, do I have Meniere's disease? And certainly you need to see an ENT doc for that. I hope that dizziness is not bad for you. But that's just a real toughie. I wish I had, you know, I always see stuff over the internet, you know, buy this thing, it cures tinnitus, but I've never seen much of it work, to be honest with you. Some people have to mask the sound, you know, the noisemaker, especially at night, it seems to bother people at night more. You know, and certain people will get a hearing aid because of that, and that tends to help a little bit. But hang in there. My brother used to have it really bad, and just one day it just went away forever. So who knows? Mm. You know, those little semicircular canals and those little cilia in your inner ear, they're the fluid, it's just tough. It's a balancing act, but I wish I had the magic cure, but you can try that and see if it works.
All right. I hope that helps, Brandy. Let's get to, where am I at here? Let's get to Mama B's place. There seems to be a buzz going around the web about glucose-resistant starch and the preparation methods of certain foods. Any information on this? I'm not sure what this is. What's your thoughts?
like sticky rice. Some people think sticky rice does that. It, you know, it won't spike your sugar levels. One good idea is to get a Freestyle Libre and to wear it and just see, you know, what kind of glucose resistant starches do that. Like cauliflower may do it. You know, certain people, like Kelly makes cauliflower mashed potatoes and yeah. It tastes really great. Just have to fool around with it a little bit and see what works for you. But there's certain keto breads and there's all kinds of things out there now that can not spike your sugar levels. So, great question.
It is interesting the preparation of the foods as
miracle,
well.
Miracle noodles, they have those. And there's a lot of different stuff out there.
Thank you for that question, Mama Beast Place. Let's get to Tiffany's question here. What is the best to take for PCOS? I'm assuming this is supplements, maybe some medications. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, polycystic ovarian disease. It usually starts in later teenage years. It can really play havoc with your hormones, fertility, skin, hair, weight, everything. But basically, it's a disease of insulin resistance. That's what people need to understand about PCOS. It's insulin resistance. Pre-diabetes, diabetes, whatever you want to say. So you need to get on a really low-carb diet for sure. You know, your testosterone level is usually going to be high with this. Some people get on birth control pills for it if they have just crazy, heavy, painful periods, irregular periods. You know, some things I use medically, of course, metformin, which is great for making your insulin work better, and spironolactone, which is a diuretic that kind of acts like a DHT blocker, dihydrotestosterone blocker. It's also a diuretic, so it gets rid of some of the fluid. So it can be managed for sure. But the first thing I would look at is what you're eating. You know, then there certainly are some really good medications for this. But to me, the diet is best. Berberine is the best supplement to take for this, you know, to help you overcome some of that insulin resistance. But that's one that should be looked at pretty seriously.
And Tiffany, we did a deep dive on that, on Explain This with Robin Riddle. So if you search on our YouTube channel, PCOS, Explain This, or Robin Riddle, PCOS, that'll definitely come up. And it's just a deeper dive in terms of like how an integrated medical practice looks at and treats PCOS. Let's get to Tracy's question here. Are you using or recommending Celtic salt?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly do. I like it. Great form of salt. I do. I like Redmond's Real Salt. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it. You know, from what I read, really the white salts, like the Redmond's white salt is better than the pink Himalayan.
Interesting. I didn't know
Celtic
that.
Celtic salt. Yeah. There's another salt I read about today that I don't know the name of it, but it's supposed to be the best tasting salt, and it comes from Mexico. So there's all kinds of good ones out there.
Super interesting. Thank you for that question there, Tracy. Dave is asking about your coffee of choice. Why don't you go ahead and tell Dave kind of what you do for coffee?
If I can get a low acid organic coffee, which I do, I go to Earth Fair or Whole Foods, or sometimes I can find it at Fresh Market. If I'm getting a brand name coffee, I like the Lavazza Italian coffee, and add a little bit of baking soda, just a pinch of baking soda to kind of get some of the acid down in it. I'm pretty snobbish when it comes to coffee types, but if you can find it, go to Earth Fair and get the low acid organic coffee. There's several different brands of it.
Let's get to, thank you for that, Dave. Let's get to Aura's question here. I have a daughter that deals with slight anxiety and she is breastfeeding her 6-month-old baby. I'm wondering if you feel like L-theanine or the supplement stress relief from Life Extension is safe. So, she's breastfeeding, dealing with some anxiety. What's your thoughts on a couple safe supplements?
Yeah. And that last question too, I do grind my own beans with coffee. Mm. I have a Jura coffee maker. Yep. I never go to Starbucks or any, I just grind my own. It's fresher. But yeah, gosh, I was talking to one of, you know, our nurses today, who's breastfeeding. She asked me if she could use saffron. So we did a search on it. You sure can. As a matter of fact, it may help augment milk production, saffron. Mm. So that's probably my favorite one. But yeah, I mean, L-theanine is going to be safe. You know, and certainly stress relief would be safe for you and for the baby. I don't see any problem with that. My favorite is saffron, though.
Thank you for that, Aura. Definitely check out saffron. It's one of the, like, whenever we put out anything on saffron, people just rave about it. Anyone who's taken it swears by it. Let's get to, let's see here, Rodney and Lisa. Is there any vitamin that someone can take to boost their energy level temporarily while waiting to have surgery for parathyroid?
Yeah. One thing, make sure your vitamin D level is above 50 before you go into any kind of elective surgery. It'll just do better. But I like CoQ10. I like PQQ. Matter of fact, Dr. Rogers' energy formula, which I kind of put together, has both those in it. And it's less expensive than taking either one of them by themselves. So, yeah, you flipped it right up there. Did you do that, Ben?
Yes.
Man, that's pretty quick. I can't believe that. You can do that. Now, you may want to, you know, talk to your surgeon beforehand that you may want to get off of that for a couple of days, 2 or 3 days before the surgery. I've not known it to cause increased bleeding times, but, you know, my brother, my dad used to do a lot of parathyroid surgeries, and they didn't like any extra bleeding around that area because those things are tiny. They're hard to locate sometimes. You know what they use? Methylene blue to locate them, to map it out. But yeah, I would do that. You know, the B vitamins be fine. They're water soluble. Those are known as energy vitamins. So you could certainly do that. I don't think anything going to affect your calcium levels with that. As far as that goes, you know, the, parathyroid, you probably have a parathyroid adenoma, which causes your calcium level to be real high and can cause problems. So, you know, that's the cure for it. So those are some things I would do.
All right, Rodney and Lisa, I hope that helps. Donna Steve's asking about beef tallow. What's your quick thoughts on
this? Awesome. Okay. Yeah. One of the best.
All right, Donna Steve, hope that helps. Let's get to, Jackson here. Jack, what's going on, man? I'm glad you're here. Even though you're late, you're here. Thank you for hanging out. You know, who's also here is probably Allison and Grandma Mary over at the Blake. Huge shout out to the Blake, Allison, Grandma Mary, and the whole crew. Love you guys over there. I'm going to put this up from Brandy, not dizzy, and have ENT consult next, and see you, in July. Okay.
Great. I hope I can come up with something for you. Yeah, that's a toughie. I'm glad you're not dizzy. The worst thing is dizziness, I think. I had it one day, and it was awful. Have you ever had vertigo, Ben? It's just,
I don't want it.
I just woke up with it one time and threw my guts up, and the whole day I was laying on the couch with a bucket beside me. It was awful. I was walking sideways, and I don't know what caused it, you know. Some things in medicine, we just don't know. You know, I was talking to somebody today. We only know probably 3% of medical knowledge.
Yeah.
So many unknowns.
Thank you for putting that in there, Brandy, and we'll kind of keep tabs on it. Let's get to Angela's question on YouTube. Hello, what are your thoughts on methylene blue and NI-racetam together for cognitive support after a TBI? I'm not sure the latter one, but of course methylene blue is something we've talked a lot about. And I know you're a big believer in that first. I'm thinking UTIs, not TBIs. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, TBIs too. You know, the thing that I'm not sure, I'm going to have to do research on the aniracetam. You know, I don't know why I'm not putting that together. I know what it is, but it's not clicking with me right now. So I have to do a little research on that. But, you know, after a TBI, you know what works pretty good is progesterone. Mm. Had a patient ask Pratik about that today. I'd mentioned it on one of my podcasts and they thought I meant prednisone, but no, progesterone. Mm. They can, after a traumatic brain injury, even in the ER, if somebody happens to know something about it, which they probably won't, but IV progesterone is really good for tamping down that inflammation.
Interesting.
And keeping your brain safer. So, but I do like methylene blue for many reasons. And one of them certainly is cognition. There's all kinds of stuff you can use for cognition. Also, like Bacopa is a good one. The one I think is called piracetam. Maybe that's a relative of what, but I know that's used quite a bit for cognition. It may be even in Cognitex. I'm forgetting what the mechanism on protecting the neurons is on that. But anyway, it's supposed to be protective. Mm. I'm sure it's in the same family. But phosphatidylcholine, phosphatidylserine, are things that can help, and maybe getting on a ketogenic diet. TBI is tough and you need to do everything you can. A lot of people think omega-3s help it. Mm. You know?
All right, Angela, I hope that helps.
Good question.
Great question there. Let's get to MK. We're going to get to as many as we can here in the next couple minutes. MK
just was brought. I was just brought a bottle of, thank you.
Grandma Mary came up with the concoction
of that?
Methylene blue and orange juice this weekend.
Yeah, it tasted pretty good.
MK's asking, any thoughts on how to rid excess skin for weight loss, supplements or other ways? I know you get this question a lot. How do you typically answer this one?
Yeah, a lot of people do surgery for it. But matter of fact, you need to talk to Kelly, my daughter. She's got some new ways to do it. She has some serum. She has some lasers that do it that work pretty good on cellulite and wrinkly skin from weight loss, crepey skin. And I think we're probably going to maybe get an extra wand that will do that, at least help a little bit. So you can try those unless you want to go to the extreme of getting surgery to cut off the loose skin. I've seen that done as well. Mm. But, you know, drink enough water, tone your muscles up. You know, you want to gain muscle. And also probably take some collagen.
Yeah.
You know, I like the keto collagen. That's a good thought that you could do. But, yeah, those are some things that you ought to think about.
All right, MK, I hope that helps. Let's get to, I want Ruth.
Vitamin E is good too.
Vitamin E, MK, if you didn't get that, for excess skin from weight loss. Ruth is asking, saffron safe with Eliquis and also methylene blue. So can you take saffron and methylene blue with Eliquis?
Yeah, I think you can. I think you can. If you started bruising, let me know, but I don't recall any contraindications with it. You know, the only thing I would tell people, if you used really high doses of methylene blue, you may want to get your G6PD checked, which is a blood test we check for a mutation. for an enzyme that's responsible for inhibiting hemolysis of red blood cells. I found one today that was low. Matter of fact,
really?
I found one today. I've only found two since I've been doing this, I think. But so IV vitamin C is out for them.
Interesting.
So yeah, I did find that today. But
Ruth, I hope that helps. Let's get to Mark's question real quick. And we're seeing a national norovirus outbreak.
Norovirus.
Of course, Mark is going to put in something that I cannot pronounce. Reports of 15 pounds of weight loss in a matter of days. What do you suggest to keep hydrated and foods to add back into diet post-infection?
Yeah, you're right. There is an outbreak. I think Kelly and Andy both had it last week. Mm. And, you know, Katie gave both of them an IV, and it really helped them. But yeah, I mean, that can really be a bad actor. Of course, I went out and bought them some Pedialyte.
Yeah.
So I like that a lot. And foods just like foods that have a lot of water in them, like applesauce, gelatins, very soft diet. You know, certainly would avoid anything that had a lot of dairy in it. And I like activated charcoal for that situation a lot. And I certainly would take something like Digest Shield, you know, to help keep that gut milieu kind of more balanced. That's a great question. You know, usually it goes away pretty quickly, you know, but it can last a few days. Mm. You can wipe you out. It really can. It's terrible. It's almost projectile vomiting that you can get.
Mm. Mark, thank you so much for that question. We're going to
pretty contagious too. Contagious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to a few fun ones here. My brother, Steve, what kind of dog is Izzy and Ike?
Bernie Doodle, which is a combination of Bernese Mountain Dog and a poodle. So yeah, they're cool dogs.
Roel, Ben, did the pasta taste better or different on your trip? Yes. Way better. Totally different. Just more fresh is probably the best way to describe it. But yeah, the pasta in Italy was my favorite part. You know, in addition to seeing everything super cool and being with my best buddy. But yes.
Did you give us a highlight from the trip, man, while we're talking? I mean, you spent 10, 12 days in Italy, and you had to have some highlights.
Yeah. I mean, the food was really the highlight. The food and kind of, you know, we just moved around so quickly. So I'd say the highlight was just the process of getting from one place to the other. You know, being completely shocked at, like, you know, seeing something that you've seen pictures of all your life, and then all of a sudden it's just there, like in Rome. But to Roel's question, the pasta was definitely a highlight. The carbonara in Rome was incredible. Mark is saying methylene blue martini shaken non-stir. That's exactly right.
That's a good idea. James Bond.
It looks like we're going to get Ike to close out the show. I hope I got to everybody's question. Goodness, it's so good to see everybody.
Yeah, it's going to be good. We'll let you know what you may look for a podcast. We're going to be in Orlando later this week for our annual longevity meeting, and it's going to be highlighting inflammation.
Yep.
So that's going to be a really good conference. I love that Orlando conference. I always learn a lot. There's always some very heavy hitters, some very famous speakers will be there. And
is he going to be speaking?
Wet. Who
is he going to be speaking this at the conference?
I hope so. look at Izzy and Ike. They love each other.
Guys who are, if y'all are regulars on the show, y'all know that Izzy and Ike close out our show each week. So we are going to call it a show. How do you think we did, Pop?
I think we did good. I had a good time.
Honestly, I think we're a 9 out of 10 tonight.
Do you?
I think we were a 9.
Okay.
I will say The people who are with us live tonight, they get a 10. Those questions were incredible.
Those people always get a 10.
Goodness.
You know, I've never had a bad question.
These questions are so good. So good. Guys, thank y'all for hanging out with us each and every Tuesday. We will be back Tuesday at 7 for another episode of the Performance Medicine Show. If you guys do not get our Performance Weekly, that is the email we send out every single Tuesday before the show. That has all of our best content from the week before. Make sure you check that out. You can sign up on our website, performancemedicine.net. I want to give a quick shout out to everybody on our performance medicine team. Y'all worked incredibly hard over the last week during our Mother's Day specials. Stay late. We dealt with some technical issues on Friday. Y'all just did incredible. Thank you so much for all the hard work y'all do in all of our offices. And I saw Robin Riddle in here tonight. Katie Gegley, our operations manager. I'm sure Carter's with her. Love all you guys. Our Fountain City crew was training up in Kingsport today, which was so much fun. So love the performance medicine team. We adore you and thank you for being with us on these Tuesday nights after long days at the office. You had a long day at the office. You need to go get a break. I appreciate you, man.
Thanks, Ben.
Guys, we love you. As always, we will see you next week. And where's my outro? I'm searching for my outro. Where's it at? Outro.
Don't
outro.
Go away.
Thanks, guys, for listening to this episode of the podcast. Please share the podcast with your friends. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe. We will see you guys next time.